This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Bombastic, audacious, revolutionary, rash, outraged, organised, assertive, activist.
Broad.
On Joy 94.9.
I'm gonna marry the night. I won't give up on my life. I'm a warrior queen, live passionately tonight. Not waxing my legs or shaving my pits or bleaching my lips.
And you're listening to Broad on Joy 94.9.
Goodbye. I hate to see you go, but have a good time. So long. Have a good time. Have your fling. Be gay with your new love. I'm setting you free. Dance and sing. Pretend that it's true love. Remember that I'll be waiting to welcome you home. So have a good time.
And welcome to Broad. Broad would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the lands that we broadcast from, the Kulin Nation, and pay respect to all Kulin elder women from the past, present, and those women who will be our future elders. We'd also like to acknowledge with respect the traditional owners of all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander lands that we broadcast to. Pay respect to all elders and women elders from all clans and nations, past, present and future. So yes, welcome to Broad. That was Riff Gordon, Have a Good Time, from the Hidden Figures soundtrack. One of the many different songs and pieces of music that are just awesome from that amazing film, which I'm picking to get Best Picture. I think next week is D-Day or Decision Time. So let's hope that happens. That's just my own personal opinion. Anyway, I want to welcome a whole heap of awesome people tonight. Starting off with, we're going to be speaking to this amazing character. Yes, Justin Tilliker, the King of Queens. It's a special show. We've also got Christina in here too. We've got a lot to talk about there, and their new show coming up at the Butterfly Club and more. We'll also be chatting to Mila Sinova from Huddle Design, and actually Jane Connery from Broad Designs will be talking to her about the work that she's doing in design and women in design. And we've also got even more coming up. I mean, my goodness, what a show tonight. We've got Lara Nichols from the Australian National Gallery, talking about abstract women in Australian art. Should I say abstract women's art? That could be cubist, couldn't it? Whatever way you look at it, it's amazing, and it's coming soon to Geelong. That's right, not to Melbourne, but Geelong. So regional parts of Victoria are doing really well, getting a lot of awesome exhibitions, which, speaking of which, I'll be speaking to Gary Hilberg later on about Tracy Moffat and his work together, the video art that they do. And that's it. That's the end of the show. I hope everyone enjoyed that. There you go. It's done.
That was fun.
That was fun, wasn't it? And so anyway, to start with, welcome to Broad, your second time on Broad, Justin Tilliker.
Thank you for having me, Sonia.
It's been a long time coming.
Yes. Yes, it has. I've been waiting for this date.
It's been full of puns.
Shall I leave the room?
No.
Oh, definitely not. No, I need chaperone. Okay. Or maybe Justin needs the chaperone.
Yeah, I think Justin needs the chaperone, actually, yeah.
And, of course, we've got one of Triple Bypasses stars.
Yeah, baby. Hi.
Hi.
This is my first time on Broad. This is really cool.
Yeah.
I like being guest. A guest is nice.
You didn't say guest. We said guest. All right.
Guest, yeah.
Now, Triple Bypass, what's that about? Just briefly.
Bypass is the only bisexual show on the only LGBTIQ+ radio station in Australia. So we talk all things bisexuality, pansexuality, queerdom, women's stuff, sometimes men's stuff, because bisexual men are probably not represented well at all.
That is true.
Every Tuesday night at 9 p.m. And
I know. Yeah. It's sort of like, you know, if you were on a parallel universe, there would be Broad and there'd be you and all those other shows that are on 9 p.m.
I think we're the best.
Yeah. And Broad. Justin's been on Triple Bypass because he's bisexual.
Yes, Justin's bisexual. Yeah. Kristen, who's Justin's alter ego, is a lesbian. So that's very interesting, a lesbian woman playing a bisexual man.
Yes. Keeps me on my toes.
Yes.
So what's happening, Justin? It's been a while since we've had you on, a few months.
Yes.
King of Queens, what's this all about?
Yeah, I decided to put on my own cabaret show. Yeah.
As you do.
You know, jump on the big, you know, number one, I guess, the stand and go, hey, there's a drag king in town and he's ready to entertain you. So I got a team together and I'm trying to, I guess, bring king and queens together to put on shows that say something about the world that we live in today. Mm. So we're putting on a show about the X-Files.
Well, it's not so much about the X-Files. It's kind of using the X-Files universe.
Yeah,
I think, to talk about refugees and their plight here in Australia and overseas.
That's interesting.
And leaders.
And leaders.
That
and
aren't really leaders. We call them leaders.
Orange-faced.
Dear.
Idiots from another plane of existence. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I believe. I don't know if you watch American Horror Story. Do you follow that? Did you hear the news that they're going to be doing their next season 7? I believe it's season 7 or season 8. Anyway, they're going to be doing it on the topic of the election.
Oh, really? Oh,
brilliant.
Just Trumpia, I'm telling you.
That's going to be so cool.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be
It's going to trump all the others.
I see what you did there.
Royal
really
flush. But the scary thing is they won't have to write much into it. It'll already be scary enough.
Yeah.
You know?
Pretty much.
So is this going to be scary? Are people going to be freaking out when they go and see this?
No, they're going to be laughing their asses off, hopefully.
Good.
Yeah. Hopefully.
And hopefully take something away with them that they can really sink their teeth into when they get home.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we're not shy in tackling some of the issues that we in this community and in Australia have very close to our hearts, equality and, you know, women not being disparaged or discriminated against for any reason, or anyone being disparaged or discriminated against. So,
I mean, that's what I have to say often to people who don't understand what feminism is. And they go, well, you know, I believe in equality and stuff like that. And I said, well, that's what it is.
Yeah.
Actually,
pretty much.
That's what it is.
It's just treating everyone exactly the same.
Exactly the same.
Yeah.
But different.
Yeah.
same, but different.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how long did it take to put this together? Like, this seems to be a project that has appeared after you've been doing so much around town, around urban scene.
I kind of just, I think it was around November last year when we sort of approached the Butterfly Club and was like, we have this great idea and let's put on a different show every month with the different drag queens and kings
so this
around
be
Melbourne.
Every month.
Every month there's a different show.
Wow, are you like, okay.
Yeah.
I'm pooping my pants.
Not literally.
No, not right
metaphorically
now.
Metaphorically speaking. Yeah.
Probably sometime in the future I will be pooping my
pants. Well, the X-Files is perfect. You could be. Yeah. And it could be an alien abduction in there too.
Yeah, grab the evidence bag and...
Get the gloves on.
Yeah.
So you're going to be dressed up. I mean, I love the poster. We'll have to put that up on the Facebook page for Broad. You both look, I don't know, familiar to people who know that genre of X-Files. So where did you get the outfits? Is it the easiest cosplay ever?
It is the easiest cosplay ever. It's having red hair and putting on a suit, basically.
I know. Yeah. Scully. I keep wanting to call you Scully.
Well, you can, because that's the compliment of all compliments.
Yeah, and the beard for me was just super easy.
Yeah, Mulder doesn't wear a beard. So.
Yeah.
Oh, didn't he in one of the movies he does, because he's lost it. Yeah. Are you going to do that too, where he loses the plot?
He does lose the plot.
Does Justin lose the plot?
Justin is Mulder.
Oh, okay. Yeah. We don't want to spoil it.
No.
No. So drag king culture, for those who don't know, what can you tell us about it? What can you tell us? What makes it unique?
Well, it's definitely around in Melbourne. A lot of people think that it's not. There are events that happen around Melbourne. Kong's Kings, for example, is a big, huge event for drag kings to come together. Mm-hmm. It's very rare that drag king and queens come together, so I'm trying to sort of bring that
scene
together.
But you did that last year, didn't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, I did that with the Dragnet competition that I was doing, but I was the only drag king. Yeah.
How does it feel to be in a room full of frocks, basically, and you're the dude?
Yeah, I kind of keep a little bit quiet, keep to myself, I'd listen very carefully and nod and then occasionally, you know, jump out and, you know.
Use some of that male privilege.
Yes, use some of that male privilege that I don't get anywhere else.
With all due respect.
Yeah, of course.
Oh, shame. Yeah. So, it's confronting, but I think I know how to handle it. Hmm. Yeah.
Justin can pretty much hold his own in any situation, really. I mean, because he's sassy enough and charming enough and sexy enough just to sort of go, hey, and everyone goes, hi, Justin. So
you're not our token drag king.
No.
Drag man.
No, there are others around.
But we've never had, I mean, you've been it for us on Broad. You know.
I feel so lucky.
And people just go, oh, swoon. Back off. Don't objectify them. Leave them alone.
Yes.
They are maybe pretty, you do like
objectify. Yeah, Justin does like the swoon. Yeah.
I do. Yes.
So where can people go? Because it's a good idea to know where this is all happening. I mean, we know the Butterfly Club.
Yes.
But what are the dates? And
you want to take this one, Christina?
Sure.
Christina's the expert on management.
Oh, everything. The 25th of February at 10 p.m. is when we're on, which is this Saturday night. Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. This Saturday night.
I know. It's so close.
It is extremely close.
Extremely close.
That's theatre, though. It's like you know, we gave ourselves the challenge of writing a different show every month and putting it together and getting the music together and choreographing. So it's just been this massive, like, trip on a roller coaster that hasn't quite ended yet. And you know that if you look down, you'll freak out. So it's just looking straight ahead.
Put the blinkers on.
Keep going. And after the last show, which is in April, I will probably have a mental breakdown. Just putting that out
there.
No,
it'd be great. We've already gotten through one of the four.
We have. This is the second of the four.
Okay,
in this series.
Cool. So this is once a month.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And 10 p.m. is a good time, is it? Like, I guess people are just going out or waking up, as my case. I'm usually getting out of my coffin about that time.
Yeah.
9:30.
Yeah.
The sun's gone down.
Yeah.
Although lately the weather's thrown me out because God, I had to get up earlier.
I know. And it's going to be like 32 on Tuesday.
Are you kidding?
No, it's going to heat up again.
Oh, my goodness. Yes. So where can people go to find out more?
They can jump on Justin Tillicker's Facebook page, which is just Facebook/Justin Tillicker, which is TELIQURE.
I try not to laugh every time I hear that.
You're supposed to. He is Justin Tillicker. we also have an event, obviously. So if you just type in Justin Tillicker on Facebook, if you Google Justin Tillicker, it will come up.
There's not many.
There's not many Justin Tillicker.
There's just one.
There's just the one.
Just one.
So, yeah, all the details are on. I mean, it's splashed across the interwebs.
Yep.
So all the details are there. But if you really, really just want to go ahead and book tickets now, just go straight to Butterfly Club, which is www.thebutterflyclub.com.
Yeah. We'll put that on the broad page too for you guys.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Awesome. Book some tickets. It's a fun night. It's an empowering night. It's very accepting and...
Yep, and this month we have three queens.
We do have three queens.
Enigma, Pablo McFagface, and Atlanta Dusk.
Yeah, that's a great name, Pablo McFagface.
Atlanta Dusk.
Yes.
Oh, well, I don't know
fabulous.
What that means.
She's just
I want to find out.
Yeah. And we have our returning dancer, Catherine Innes, who fans of Justin Tillicker will know is one of her, one of the Lickettes. Yes.
Not a look out, a look at.
Yeah.
Look
out.
Should have done a warning before the show.
Yes.
Okay. Well, no, that's great. Look, thank you so much for coming. It's short and sweet tonight because we're just a full house.
Yeah, it looks exciting.
Fullness tonight. Art and all sorts of art and pleasure and pain and performance and all good things like that. Pain can be good sometimes.
Yes.
It can be, yeah.
Can we say that?
Yeah. Consensual.
Consensual pain.
Of course. Absolutely consensual. Thank you for coming
on,
Justin Tillicker.
Thank you.
Thank you, Christina.
Thank
and
you.
And all the best for what's coming up for Butterfly Club. Keep us informed.
We will. Thank you so much, Sonia.
All those things. No worries. All right. This is Broad here on Joy 94.9. Up next, we've got Jane Connery. She'll be chatting to Mila Sinova about some broad designs and women in design. This is Broad on Joy. Bianca from The Girlfriedas, what does feminism mean to you?
Feminism for me is creating equality for all humans across the world, regardless of circumstance, and not keeping anyone down for whatever reason.
Broad Designs is women in design, the politics, the art, the women, the designs. Jane Connery is your host, talking to female designers about design. Broad Designs on Broad Joy 94.9.
And welcome to Broad. This part of the show, it's with Jane Connery. It's Broad Designs. But I'll let you get started. We've got a fantastic guest here, Milis. I want to welcome you to Broad first
Thank you.
Night.
Lovely to be here.
Thank you.
Great. Right. Thanks, Sonia. So this is Jane Connery on Joy 94.9, and this is Broad Design, where I talk to women about their work into, for, and through design. This week I have a special guest, as Sonia mentioned, live in the studio. This is my first live guest, yay, who is the founder of Huddle, a firm which focuses on strategic design for the 21st century. She is a thinker on a global scale and on a mission to design for good. On her impressive LinkedIn profile, she declares, "Through the use of human-centred design and complex systems thinking, I believe we can rethink and redesign the organisation's structures and ecosystem that underpin society. My life's work is to create the mechanisms that allow us to manifest meaningful realities for ourselves and each other." Welcome to Broad Designs, Milis Sinova.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Milis, the role of design is in a state of rapid evolution. Design doesn't just make pretty objects anymore. Your work involves community development and disruptive strategy. How would you describe the type of design that your studio is involved with at the moment?
So our approach to design is it's made up of three parts, I would say. So the first one is very much about systems thinking, which is being able to see things not as point solutions, so an object or an interaction, but to see them as a connected bunch of things, so as a system. The other bit is about human factors, which is very much where we gravitate towards, and that's having a very pure a human focus and designing for people in all parts of that ecosystem, not just the customer. Mm-hmm. And then there's the design component, which is, I guess, it's our methodology of choice, in that we believe that what comes with design is really suited to the complex challenges that we're facing in the world, because we're dealing with ambiguity and that sort of thing. So design being creative and iterative and action-oriented helps deal with those types of problems.
And it's big design, isn't it?
It is little design. Yeah, it is. So we refer to the types of challenges that we deal with as super systems.
Yes.
And that's why, you know, in our business, there's a really big focus on anything is possible, because when you're thinking about changing super systems, it's like, really? Can you actually change a super system? But you absolutely can.
I like the positive thought that you can too. I think that's great. I read that you've said impactful design is not just an intellectual activity. It is an activity that requires all of you. We often forget that it takes human collaboration to create design. What role does diversity have in creating impactful design?
So there's a really important reason why we're called Huddle, actually, and that is that we believe that it takes multiple perspectives to solve the problems that humanity faces at the moment, that you can't just take a bunch of engineers, for example, to solve an engineering problem for people. And so the way that we approach design is very much from that viewpoint of being completely diverse, not necessarily in terms of the way that we talk about diversity normally in terms of gender and that sort of thing. In fact, we seem to attract more women than we do men. So we have the reverse sort of challenge problem to the one that you're interested in.
Yes.
But also in terms of experiences and mindsets and life experiences and qualifications and, you know, skills, mindsets, knowledge sets and all of that sort of thing. So then we need to create a way of working and a way of viewing the world that actually withstands that friction, because you do have multiple perspectives kind of struggling with those challenges.
Mm. And so the gems come from the pressure,
with that friction. Absolutely, the tension, yeah.
So you've recently finished a book called This Human. Congratulations.
Thank you.
I'm very jealous.
It was quite an undertaking.
As I said to you just before, when we were having dinner with a friend, I know, probably a couple of years ago now, I was contemplating starting a PhD and you were contemplating starting a second one. But
I know. I think that was a moment of insanity. I'm glad I didn't go down there.
After a cocktail or two.
Yeah.
But of the book, brand guru Marty Neumeier has said that this is a book you can treasure, savour and revisit at every stage of your creative life. It creates a dialogue on people rather than things, designers rather than design. Can you tell us more about your book and how it might relate to people who wouldn't necessarily call themselves designers?
Yeah. You know, I wrote from the place of human-centered design because that is what I know the most about. But the book is actually about what it takes to be the person who's designing for other people, or what it takes to be the person who wants to take an idea and bring it into reality. So just recently, my son, Cooper, who has helped with some of the illustrations that I did in the book, took the book to school to his teacher. Yes. And his teacher passed it on to the principal, and the principal read it over the weekend and said, "This dovetails beautifully into education." And so it has a very broad readership, but the position from which I've written it is coming from my knowledge base, which is around human-centered design. And I think we really do need support, as in humans need support, to be able to bring something that they've got in their minds that they're really passionate about, that they want to bring into reality and have impact, around what it actually takes to be that person. 'Cause it's not easy. And sometimes you get blocked very early on. And so that's what this book's about. It's about trying to support those people.
And what about wanting to design something? It doesn't have to be big, does it? It can be little.
Absolutely.
There's this huge thing like of memes on Facebook of life hacks, you know, just things you can do quickly efficiently. Does it sort of speak to that as well?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, we sometimes talk about the micro is the macro. Yeah.
Reversing everything.
That's right. So big system change can happen from tiny little steps done daily.
Great, great. Okay, is there any other things in the book that you would like our listeners to know about or start thinking about when it comes to design?
It's not necessarily when it comes to design. I think what I really hope the book will enable is in anyone who gets a hold of it to actually believe that they have a way to be able to make any scale of change in the way that they believe they can and want to. And that if they're going to go out and do something in the world that is going to have a positive impact on their community, they might as well make it great. You know, they might as well think about it. They might as well do it meaningfully. They might as well follow a process that supports them in making sure that it's as good as it can be. So it's not just for designers. It's really for anybody who wants to do something great.
Great. I like it. That defining design is that broad and being able to apply it to your life, I think is fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for your time tonight, Melisse. Your big design thinking and focus on social good is very inspiring. You can head to the Broad Facebook page to find more information about Melisse's book, This Human, as well as links to downloadable podcasts of all the Broad shows. I'm Jane Connery, and you're listening to Broad Design on Joy 94.9.
Perfect. I even turned my mic on. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you.
No,
I think it's a fascinating book, and what you're talking about, the micro is the macro. Yeah.
Is that
and vice
right
versa. Is that right?
Micro is the macro.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah. You know how that where that are we still on?
Yeah, okay. We're still on.
Okay. I was reading the Gut book, which actually talks about, I know this sounds a bit weird, but actually talks about, you know, obviously how the gut works.
Mm.
And she was taking the reader through the levels of scale. And the levels of scale that exist in our universe, the
beyond
way that we...
comprehension.
Beyond comprehension also exist in your gut.
Digest that, people. You know?
So at that point I was like, oh my God, when we talk about super systems and making massive change, it's actually those tiny little steps that we do every day actually make up that super system. They're not separate things. So that's why we say the micro is the macro.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't think that was going to be the message of this evening. But it turns out that
I think I just heard your mind get blown up.
It got burned. A little bit sizzle there, because I remember doing anatomy and physiology, going off on a tangent, of course, and studying the human brain, and I was just...
Yeah.
By the third page, I just fell over.
Yeah.
It was just too much.
Yeah.
I mean, it's great. It's just, but it's...
Yeah.
Wow, okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And still we don't know a lot about it.
Yeah,
we don't.
Yeah, I spent some time studying the human brain.
Mm.
And I got to a point where I was in a bit of a conundrum, because I was thinking, we are using the thing to try and understand the thing.
Yeah,
so it was like
an
eyeball kind of trying to see itself, you know, without a mirror. So I was just like, I'm not sure whether or not we're ever actually going to get to the bottom of this.
But I think maybe just make an animated thing about it.
Yeah, that works. Worked for the gut.
Done.
Yeah.
But don't they say that your head, your heart and your gut all kind of interrelate too when it comes to thinking and design and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, absolutely.
That, you know, your intuition, your gut has just as much sort of impact on your mental thoughts.
Yeah. And that is actually what I am referring to when I've said impactful design is not just an intellectual activity. It requires all of you. It actually does require all of you, your intuition, your imagination, listening to your body. What is your body telling you about the situation that you're in? And we often make design a very intellectual activity, you know, a process or a framework or a method. And it's much more than that.
It is.
Wow. Have we already found out where we can go?
Yes, we have.
Website? We've done that.
It's all there.
Okay, cool.
By the Facebook
Jane's
page,
in charge.
I'm in charge. We can keep talking if you like. So,
we have other people to
hear.
Well, thank you so much for coming on, Broad.
Absolute pleasure. That's a great program.
Thanks, Jane.
Thanks, Sonia.
That's Broad Design, and we will podcast this soonish.
Okay.
Great. As soon as I'm capable. There you go. As soon as my brain stops doing that, macro, micro Or was I thinking macaroni and cheese? I'm not sure. But anyway.
Yes, please.
This is Broad on Joy 94.9.
Feminism is just something that I feel has always been a part of my life. Mm. It's the way that I think and the way that I feel about the world. I recognise that we don't have equality. We aren't treated the same way as women. I think it's a terrible thing for all of us. I think it's a terrible thing for men, and it's a terrible thing for women. And so divided by gender, the result of that, and or maybe the cause of that, is oftentimes that we look down on women and that we see women as lesser or something other, something unusual. So feminism is an important part of the world to kind of recognise that we don't start out equally, that we have different kinds of privilege and different kinds of reasons that our lives work the way they do.
This is Broad on Joy 94.9. That was Sophie Hyde talking about feminism. Fabulous Adelaide-based filmmaker, Australian filmmaker. And thanks again to Milis Sanova for chatting to her book about her book. We'll put the rest of that on the Facebook page for Broad on Joy 94.9. Remember, you can message us too if you wish to. Very easy to do. You can SMS 0427 Joy 949. You can phone 1300 Joy 949 or email onair@joy.org.au for your opinions. Or if you're a designer, a woman especially, or you know somebody who is a woman who does design, let us know. And we'll always be interested in chatting to them and maybe showing some of the work on, you know, on the show as such, having a chat. Always good to talk about and to celebrate and support women in those areas. And up next, I've got an interview, a fabulous interview with Lara Nichols. She's a curator of something called Abstraction, Celebrating Australian Women Abstract Artists. And it runs from the 25th of May, so starts this weekend, to May the 7th, and premieres at its only Victoria venue, State of Victoria here in Australia, at the Geelong Gallery, and then it's going touring nationally. And the curator Lara, I was lucky to talk to her. She's works, of course, at the National Gallery of Australia, so it's a fabulous exhibition from all accounts, and we look forward to finding out more about it and wish it well on its next, I believe, 2 years of touring around the country. So a great chance for people in Geelong at the Geelong Gallery to check that out from this Saturday 25th. This is Broad, and this is the interview with Lara here on Joy 94.9.
Okay.
When you're ready, thanks.
I'm Alison Okay, you ready?
Yeah, cool.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm Alison McLean, and this is Broad on Joy 95. Sorry, you have to tell me that again. 94.9. I'll try that again.
Okay, thanks.
This is Alison McLean, and... Sorry, I'll say it again. I'm Alison McLean, and this is Broad on Joy 94.9 FM.
Perfect. That's fantastic. Thank you so much. This is Sonia for Broad on Joy in 94.9, talking to Lara Nichols, and it's something called, well, it's a part of an exhibition happening at the Geelong Gallery, Abstraction, Celebrating Australian Women Abstract Artists. Starts 25th of February, runs to the 7th of May. So welcome to Broad, Lara.
Thank you very much for having me, Sonia, to talk about our exhibition, Abstraction.
Yeah, excellent. So, yes, Lara Nichols, curator of this wonderful exhibition. And what else do you do? You curate...
I'm a curator at the National Gallery of Australia.
Right, good.
And we have a significant part of our work is actually travelling exhibitions, because we have this national collection which the whole nation owns, and not everyone can come to Canberra to see the works, and they're not always on display. So, you know, an important part of our charter is to take the collection out on the road and tour it to far-flung places all over the country, you know, to Western Australia, to Darwin, to Queensland, Northern Territory, Victoria, you know, all the sort of southeastern states as well, and Tasmania. So it's a very big part of our work. Mm. And this exhibition is part of that scheme, which is supported by the government, which is the Travelling Exhibitions Program. Mm. So its show will open in Geelong. That's our first venue for the show to be exhibited in, and then it will move on to four other venues after that.
Excellent. So can you tell us a little bit about the exhibition?
Yes, so it's been 2 years in the making, this exhibition, and all of the works are drawn from the collection of the National Gallery of Australia. So the National Gallery of Australia has the country's best collections of abstraction, not just Australian abstraction, but international abstraction also. And this exhibition, we decided to do a sort of a grand sweep, surveying the importance of this tendency in 20th century and 21st century art, and to particularly draw out the women artists who have contributed in this field. So the earliest work in the show is 1925 work by Margaret Preston, who, you know, everyone will know Margaret Preston. And then the most recent work is actually an Indigenous woman, Louise Malavi from Kununurra in Western Australia, and that's a 2013 work. There's 74 works, sculptures, works on paper, prints, paintings, and 38 artists, women artists, are represented, seven of whom are Indigenous women. The story, so it's quite an in-depth but also very broad survey of the contribution that women have made to abstraction in Australia, which is really quite meaningful, and that, you know, in many respects they were the leaders in abstraction in this country.
Oh, excellent. Well, about time. Timely as well, I guess.
It's interesting. At the moment, there's sort of this revival of interest in women abstractionists, and I've noticed overseas a couple of shows have come out, mostly solo shows about women who have perhaps been less, who have been obscured in the art historical narrative. But there has been quite an interest in Denver in America. There was a show on abstract expressionist women artists from America. So there seems to be something in the air. People are kind of, you know, working in this field a lot more at the moment, and it's, you know, just this serendipity that our show is coinciding with that growing interest.
Cool, that's really good. Now, has there ever been an exhibition of this calibre before, and do you have any idea why it's taken so long for something like this to come into being?
Well, look, I think there hasn't been a show that does this really broad survey of women artists. There have been shows about abstraction. In fact, the National Gallery of Australia have done exhibitions on abstraction, and there has been individual exhibitions about particular, you know, protagonists within that genre. But no one, I don't think, in Australia, and I could be corrected, and it'd be great if I was, and no one has actually looked at surveying the contribution of a broad group of women artists to the field. So I think we're possibly breaking new ground. And as for why this has been, there's probably a myriad of reasons, but often the male artists tend to sort of be the dominant names, I suppose. And so, you know, for example, when we think of abstraction in Australia, we quite rightly think automatically of artists like Tony Tuckson, for example. So they're often, you know, they're sort of much more substantial, but their work sort of dominated the consciousness, I suppose. And we'll think of an artist like Ian Fairweather as another example, and then the really strong geometric abstractionists from the 60s.
Yes.
And so it tends to be the male names that stick. But the other reason is that abstraction as a whole has been considered kind of niche in a way, where artists have practiced in it. But in Australia, we're quite conservative. So we sort of shied away, I suppose, from it as an art form. Mm. And then during the sort of 80s and 90s, figuration became really strong again. So I think it's just it's a timing thing. You know, now there's this resurgence of interest in modernism, and then, of course, abstraction comes after that.
Mm.
So I think there's a sort of a timing factor involved there too.
What's been the time period for putting this together?
About 2 years, maybe a bit longer. As a curator, what happens is you tend to mull over ideas for quite a while. Like, you'll be playing with a concept and an idea, and then you'll start to look at the works that will support that idea or are worth illustrating that concept. And that period is often can be, you know, ages. It might be more than a year or two. But essentially, I started thinking through abstraction back in 2013 or 14, I think it was. And then I distilled it into the women abstractionists. So it's, you know, it's taken, it's a 3-year project, really, if you think about it,
Oh, excellent, cool. Now, do you think there is a distinct style that makes the artworks Australian? And to that end, can that be seen, you know, as also it was a woman's art? Do you think that's evident in the work?
Look, it's a tricky question to answer. I guess the obvious...
I realise now it's tricky. As I'm thinking, I'm going...
No, it's a good question to think through. The obvious Australianness, if you like, I suppose, would reside in the Indigenous works, of which there are seven from different communities and different language groups. But the interesting thing about abstraction is that artists tended to fall in love with it because it had this sort of universal language.
Right.
So geometry is a universal language. It's not at all to do with nationhood or anything like that. And they're artists, they're really distilling the complex ideas of the world, and they choose abstraction to do it, or they're distilling things that are fleeting and invisible, like weather conditions. You know, we have one painting in the show about wind, and that's a wind that occurs all over the world. It doesn't matter whether you're in Australia or England or wherever. So just inherent in its very being, abstraction is a universal language. And many of these artists in the show have actually studied and travelled overseas, so they were absorbed in those, that milieu of work, and that really breathed life into their practice in many ways. So it's interesting. It's kind of probably the one non-national art form you can lay your hands on. But then, of course, when we get to Indigenous work, there is that, you know, very intrinsic connection to country. It's indelible. It's so entrenched in the artist's relationship to country that it has that Australianness. I think you see it in Indigenous work too. I think the women's painting is in a different emotional space than the men's painting at times as well.
Right, yeah.
Not to have a hierarchy in any respect whatsoever.
No, of course not. No.
Just an observation about the subjects that they're drawn to, and I guess the dreamings that the women are custodians of, and the things that they will pick out of those stories, I guess, maybe from a just different perspective.
Maybe too, it's the matrilineal aspect too of culture. So it's that original driving point, perhaps. I'm just, you know, thinking of that experience. The exhibition has work by Emily Cam Nawari as an Indigenous artist. How important was it to include her art? And what can you tell us about her work in the exhibition?
I'm trying out this thesis, so I may be wrong, but I think there's there's some seed of truth in it. And my feeling with Emily is that prior to her arrival on the art scene in capital cities, because of course she'd been practicing for a long time before suddenly her paintings were known in Sydney, Melbourne and around the world. Prior to that, abstraction was considered quite niche. So yes, institutions would collect it. Yes, certain collectors would collect it, but it was kind of like it wasn't mainstream. It was revered and respected, but a lot of people were probably a bit resistant to it because there was this feeling that, you know, and perhaps in the general population, that unless you can grasp what a painting is about from looking at it straight away, there's sort of a kind of slackness to the artist. You know, they haven't actually been realistic, or you know, there can be that sort of sense running through it. In fact, in the 40s, there was a group that were the Antipodeans, who were anti any sort of abstraction coming out of America and wanted to assert figuration, for example. So, you know, in many respects, the abstraction was by and large collected by the cognoscenti. And so it was a bit niche. And I think I'm right in saying that, in Australia at least, not overseas necessarily, but in Australia. But I think what Emily did is she actually opened up abstraction to a far wider audience, because her work had this immediate appeal. And even if you'd never walked into a gallery before, or you hadn't collected art, or you weren't even that knowledgeable about art history, there was something in her work that you responded to and you were interested in. And she was, you know, she became a rock star of the Australian art world and internationally. And her works were admired, you know, in many, many different spheres of life. And she had, you know, a range of important exhibitions, and she was collected by people who potentially may not have ever collected art before. So I think her legacy, there's many legacies, but one of them is that she opened our eyes to thinking about abstraction and how you can distill the environment and the world into an image that's not realistic, that's not representational as such, but has a deeper meaning residing within it. So I think I think that's why it was very important to include her. And I'm, you know, very grateful that we've been allowed to travel really important work of hers from 1991.
Well, look, thank you so very much for speaking to us, Lara Nichols, here on Broad
on
Joy.
My pleasure. 94.9. Thank you, Sonia.
Thank you.
To Broad on Joy 94.9.
Joy is an independent community radio station that runs on your support. Why not make a tax-deductible donation? Help us keep broadcasting the voices that matter to you. Make a tax-deductible donation anytime online by clicking on the Donate to Joy link at joy.org.au. Too easy. All donations over $2 receive an immediate tax deduction in your 2017 tax return. The Summer of Joy, Joy 94.9.
Yes, it still is summer, somewhat, here on Broad on Joy 94.9. I think it's only 16 degrees, but we can live in hope there, Jane.
Yeah, would be nice. What's it supposed to be tomorrow? Do we know?
16 degrees?
I don't know.
It's Melbourne. Like it'll be a weather person?
It'll be snowing, Sonia, trust me.
And thanks again to Lara Nichols. We spoke to her earlier in the week about Abstraction, celebrating Australian women abstract artists. We'll put the link on there. It's going to be at the Geelong Gallery starting the Saturday, the 25th of February, and goes all the way through till March the 7th, and then goes on tour. And basically, this has taken up 5 years of her life. Is that normal?
Maybe
Jane?
For her it is. I think it's fantastic how all that art is travelling regionally. Sonia, we were talking about that before.
And we miss out on the cities, but you know, we can't have it all. It's had it all for years, didn't we?
It's a short train trip. It won't kill
is
you,
it?
Yeah.
Well, I hope not. But yeah, look, so Geelong. Good on you, Geelong. And up next, we have got Gary Hilberg talking about working with Tracy Moffat, the fabulous Australian artist, and something called this fantastic exhibition that's going to be at SAM, Shepparton Art Museum, from the 28th of January. It's on now, and it runs through to the 19th of March. It's called Tracy Moffat, Gary Hilberg, featuring montages. It's called The Full Cut, 1999 to 2015. So we'll have a listen to that. Do you know much about Tracy Moffat or Gary Hilberg?
No, but I know that, again, this regional art gallery thing, you take a whole weekend. You go and do a bed and breakfast.
It's a road trip.
And hang out. It sort of makes a cultural experience for the whole weekend.
We had somebody called Brad. Fantastic. Thank you, Brad. He is now a member, I believe, or he's just sent in. He is a member, but he sent in saying loving the tunes and the chat. Cool.
Yay, Brad.
Thanks, Brad. All right, here's Gary Hilberg talking to us here on Broad on Joy 94.9 about that video work with Tracy Moffat on now at SAM, Shepparton Art Museum. This is Broad on Joy. This is Sonia, and this is Broad on Joy 94.9. And tonight we're speaking to a gentleman, Gary Hilberg, who's involved with something to do with Tracy Moffat, now a wonderful artist, and we like to talk about women artists on the show when we get a chance to. I want to welcome you to Broad, Gary.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. So what's the name of the exhibition? It's, I believe it's just going to Shepparton in Victoria at the moment.
Yeah, it's on there now. It goes until March the 19th. Mm-hmm. The exhibition is called the Full Cut, and it's the eight video compilations that I did with Tracy between 1999 and 2015.
That's huge amount of time to be working on something with someone.
Well, yeah. Well. The thing is, we're very good friends, and we knew each other for a couple of years before we embarked on this. I went to film school 100 years ago and then worked as a film editor for about 20 years in the film industry. And for amusement, I used to put together pieces from feature films and television for my own amusement, accompanied by music. And Tracy saw them and thought, well, let's try and do this kind of thing together. And that was in 1999. And we started just to see what would happen with a piece called Lip, which is sequences from feature films involving black maids giving their white mistresses a great deal of attitude and grief. And it was difficult finding the pieces, but we did it, and it went really well, and it's been shown everywhere. And it was to accompany an exhibition of hers called Laudanum, which was a series of a similar theme, which she'd done the previous year. And So there were the photographs, and then there was the video. But in subsequent videos, it tended to have been on their own rather than accompanied by a new collection of photographs by her. And it went really well, and it's gone really well ever since.
Yes, no, Lip is the one that's a real standout for me. And I think, yeah, definitely with the racial tensions and the dichotomy between class as well, and what we'd loved these characters in these old films to have actually said.
It's quite well, indeed. Yeah. You know. Indeed. It's interesting that they are, for better or for worse, these kind of themes are always timely, it seems.
So what was the driving force of putting this together? Was that yourself and Tracy deciding that it would be good to, you know, put them in a collection that does get exhibited in one go?
Well, yeah. The last piece we did was at the end of 2015, which was called The Art, and that was commissioned by the Sydney Art Fair. And we hadn't done one for a while because we hadn't exhausted it, but you do want to move on to other things eventually. So we did that, and then there were a series of functions that we had to attend as part of that. This was up in Sydney, of course, and we were approached by the senior curator from ArtSpace if we would have the complete retrospective, because all eight had never been shown in together. Before. And we agreed to that, and that opened in June last year at ArtSpace in Sydney. Terrifically well presented. They really pulled out all the stops. It was shown on a large screen in one gallery, and then on eight individual screens with headphones in the second gallery. It really was a terrific exhibition, and it went very well. And of course now the touring component of that is underway now. It's currently showing in Blacktown up in Sydney, and at Shepparton here in Victoria. And that was why no one had ever asked us before. And of course Tracy has the Venice Biennale coming up in May, which has consumed a great deal of her her time and attention. She's been unable to do very much about the retrospective, so it's kind of been left to me to bang the drum, so to speak.
We're going to say bang it together as well.
Well, indeed. You know. Actually, I'm seeing Tracy tomorrow. She's in Melbourne at the moment.
Oh, so, fantastic!
So it'll be good to talk about all this with her then.
Yeah. Look, a phenomenal. I'm from New Zealand originally, and I must admit, as an artist, that was a huge standout and had quite a popularity following over there because of her daringness and the boldness and the work that she does, you know, in such a little time, always manages to get that message across very quickly and provocatively, which is what's valuable about her work. Yes. How did you guys meet originally?
This is ironically, because we're both... The reason we've managed to do these compilations as well as we have is because we both have really extensive film knowledge and a good memory for film images. Ironically, I met her in Melbourne in 1996 while playing the silver screen edition of Trivial Pursuit. So I guess it was meant to be. And it wound up that everybody else had been knocked out, and it was just down to us.
Oh, hilarious!
The draw. yeah, it was quite ironic. And she was based in Sydney at that point, and then I saw her again not that long afterwards. I was up in Sydney, and we have a great deal in common, like artistically, so to speak. We like the same things. We like the same films. We like the same music. It's been an extremely harmonious collaboration. There's never been any terrible disagreement or anything like that. Mm. And her ideas are usually terrific. And so it's a lot of fun. It's always been a lot of fun. It's never, ever been hard work. I mean, it is hard work, but it's never seemed like that. But that was how we met. And for probably 10 years of the collaboration, she was based in New York. Mm-hmm. I only ever really saw her when she came back out to Sydney again for the openings, which were usually at the Oxley Gallery in Paddington. And that we've always made. But since she's been back, I've seen a great deal of her, obviously. But it was an interesting process. It was all conducted over the phone.
Really. Yeah, gosh.
Eventually, I think most people realise, yes, this is supposed to be amusing.
Yes, yes. It's, you know, pre-GIF. It's almost like a pre-GIF thing. You know, you see GIFs now. And you have like those few seconds of something. They remind me of that, but obviously stretched out in time and are preemptive to that. So,
yeah, that's true. It'd be
interesting, that's very true. The influences that you've had, to be honest, a massive.
Well, yeah, and particularly an artist in which I've always found slightly risible the cliche of the tortured artist starving in a garret and being, sort of wounded to their very core by the slightest criticism. Oh. We really aim to find the most melodramatic and extreme versions of the tortured artist in that piece. And yeah. I think we pretty much covered them all.
You pretty much got that, I think, yeah. And also for the work that Tracy does too, looking at, she's always been there focusing on Indigenous Australian Aboriginal culture as well and contemporary. Which wasn't something that was so evident at the time when she was doing those early photographic works in the 90s and early 90s and so on. So
yeah, that's absolutely true. Mm. Yeah, it was, we weren't exactly spoiled for choice if we wanted to look at that kind of representation. Mm. You really didn't see it in very many places.
No. Extraordinary work and a wonderful exhibition. And so it's going to, well, it's at Shepparton now.
It's at Shepparton until March the 9th. Yes, Sam.
I like that, Sam.
Yes, it's a stroke of luck that they that they got those that acronym sort of sounds quite
perfect.
Good.
Yeah.
And I'm going up there on February the 26th because I did a forum at ArtSpace back in July, once the exhibition had been running a whole month, and I'm doing another one, which is a Q&A, obviously.
Head out to Shepparton, to SAM. That's the Shepparton Art Museum, because you can see the work of Tracy Moffat with Gary Hilberg. These are featuring montages, the full cut from 1999 to 2015.
Yeah, sit there and be dazzled.
Be dazzled and maybe question why you're laughing, perhaps, but I think congratulations to the both of you for this extraordinary work.
Well, thank you very much.
That's excellent.
No, it's been a pleasure.
Thank you. This is Broad and Joy 94.9. Thanks, Gary. That was Gary Hilberg and talking about SAM and talking about the exhibition with Tracy Moffat, the video exhibition. Fantastic work. Head along there. It's running through to March as well. And also thanks to Lara Nichols, thanks to Jane Connery, and, of course, Melis.
And Melissa for coming in tonight. That was great.
Right, yeah, we'll find out more details about that and all her work and collaborations, and we'll put those on the Facebook page, although I think you already have.
Yes,
you?
We'll get there.
Oh, I'll get around to the social media.
Everything
eventually.
Was dazzling tonight.
Dazzling, I know. And we got a message. Thank you, Jade. Hi, Sonia. Hope you're well. Thank you for bringing balance to the Force. Oh, that's good.
Nice.
Is that
Star
Force
Wars
with a capital
reference
F?
For you. How exciting.
And I'm wearing my Back to the Future t-shirt. Hello. Now, up next, we have got Beck with Bite Me Down Under. Yippee. Yay. And I do mean that. Yay. I'm wrapping it up and I'm saying goodbye. I don't think I'm supposed to read out that bit. And next week, we've got Carmen Perez, cross fingers, she of the Washington March on DC. And Cleve Jones, you might remember his character was a real person. He's a real person. That was in Milk. And there's going to be a fabulous television series coming soon. So more about that, if all goes well. We'll be playing those interviews next week, the last week of February, for Broad anyway.
There you go.
You know, and then we're into March. We're marching into March.
Marching. Lots of marches going on.
I know. And thank you, Jane, for Broad Designs.
My pleasure.
All right. So Beck is looking at me, glaring at me in a good way. Yay. She's got a thumbs up. So here's some Bite Me Down Under. Thanks again for listening to us here on Broad on Joy 94.9.
Thank you. You've been listening to a broadcast on Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.